One down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Mix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it. They do. Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set. He's back to throw. Finds the pocket. Deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds?
Yes. Manningham on the sideline.
Brady's under pressure. Brady's chased. Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone. A jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now here are your hosts, Anita Marks and Paul Dottino.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. Anita Marks, Paul Dottino, and you, as always, 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513 is the phone number. Anita Marks, Paul Dottino, Lance Meadow joins us today as well, and talking all things Big Blue as they're about to play their last game of the regular season with a lot of implications on that game. We're monitoring Twitter during the show. You can find us on Twitter, Giants, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll be taking your calls, 201-939-4513. And gentlemen, let's kind of do what we did yesterday for the folks that are just listening in for the first time in regard to what this Sunday will mean for the Giants and their hopes to make it to the postseason. So, Paul, why don't you break it down for us? Obviously, the Giants need to beat the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, well, that's a given. Otherwise, all bets are off and Big Blue's season is over. They also need losses by Dallas, Minnesota, and Chicago to get into the playoffs. Now, to understand this, and, you know, Lance can get into this from certainly a couple of the teams' perspectives, I will tell you that Minnesota's playing Green Bay in a game that's very important to them because, A, the Vikings need to make the playoffs, but also, B, the Packers need a win to clinch the number two seed and a bye in the playoffs, and potentially down the road, they would like to face maybe San Francisco at Lambeau instead of going out to Candlestick. So, an important game for the Packers against Minnesota. And clearly, the Dallas game is huge to the Cowboys, and the Bears game, very important to Chicago, and Detroit for some kind of statistical reasons, more than anything else, plus a rivalry.
Well, Calvin Johnson's going for a 2,000-yard receiving season, so that certainly is a notable statistic that he'll be trying to record in the course of that game. At the end of the day, though, the Lions have lost seven in a row. It's been a very tough stretch. Matthew Stafford's been prone to turnovers, but they're hungry, they'll be at home, and they want to end the season off on a high note.
And again, let's commend Roger Goodell. If there's one thing that I think that he has done great in his tenure is kind of changed the NFL scheduling where towards the end of the year, not only are you playing, well, you are playing teams in your division. So there's an added, you know, if the Chicago Bears were taking on the Kansas City Chiefs and the Kansas City Chiefs are out and Chicago's vying for a spot in the playoffs, we'd be like, oh, you know, this is done. But there's a history between these two teams. There's history between teams in the division. And I do believe we heard that word yesterday a lot in the locker room, Paul, was pride. There's a message that head coach Tom Coughlin's been communicating to his players all week long. And we heard it very loud and clear in the locker room yesterday. And that is, look, play for yourself. Play for the pride you have as a football player within yourself on Sunday. And I think that's the same message. I would imagine that's the same message that that Schwartz is communicating to his players in Detroit, along with the fact it is a division rival. Kind of like the same mindset. Don't you think the Eagles, even though the Eagles are out of it, they hate the Giants. They hate the Cow. I mean,
sure
this
they
is,
do.
So you know, I'm kind of
playing for Andy Reid too.
And I'm kind of banking. And these players, I think, are playing for Coughlin. I think these players really respect Coughlin.
I think so.
And I think the players respect Schwartz as well. And one more thing, I saw on RotoWorld that running back Matt Forte is walking around in a boot. So even if he does play, he's still not going to be 100%. And they've lost Bush
on IR
for the season. So that bodes well for the Lions as well.
And I think you know a lot from your fantasy numbers that Jay Cutler has had a horrible second half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And so if their running game is also down, that does not bode well for the Bears.
Yeah, so I think they go in that game trying to stop Brandon Marshall.
And there hasn't been another receiver that's helped to balance out the load.
None at all.
He's targeted Marshall so heavily. Alshon Jeffrey's been hurt. Devin Hester's been hurt.
Now, the other game that we mentioned, Dallas, they need to win to get into the playoffs. Washington needs to win to clinch the division championship and a home game which is a very big deal to them. I mean, obviously the folks in D.C. are going bonkers over RG3, and why shouldn't they? I still think he's the rookie of the year. I know there are some other candidates. Certainly Luck is going to be in that mix. Whedon's going to be in that mix.
Russell Wilson, too, the Seahawks.
I meant Wilson. I was thinking W's.
Something must be in your water this morning.
Yeah, exactly. But I think I think RG3, man, you know, I picked him in the spring, and I'm sticking with the guy.
No, RG3 has just gotten better and better each and every game. And he even mentioned yesterday to the media that he thinks he can do even more against the Cowboys than he was able to do in the game against the Eagles, because he's now 2 weeks removed from that sprained MCL. So you figure that the mobility factor could help him somewhat. And the Cowboys had a lot of trouble stopping him on Thanksgiving. So I think that maybe when you see a team for the second time around, you do tend to make some defensive adjustments. But between Robert Griffin III, between Alfred Morris, between Pierre Garçon now thriving, I mean, those are a lot of weapons to ask the Cowboys to stop throughout the course of four quarters.
Don't forget that. It's not in Dallas. I got one other thing I want to mention to both of you, because I was listening to Pat Kerwin yesterday, who I have great respect for on Sirius NFL Radio. And Pat had said something that had not occurred to me. And it related to this whole play for pride thing and teams trying to scoreboard watch. Maybe you heard it. Maybe you did as well, Anita. He was saying that in this kind of situation, and if you need help, you're better off in the 1 o'clock game than you are in either the 4:30 game or the primetime game on NBC. And the reason he gave was this. Because if you go out at 1 o'clock, you have to have the mindset that we have to win our game. No end ifs or buts. Forget about watching scoreboards. Now, even though the Giants know that the 1 o'clock games include the Lions game, which they do need, you have to worry about your own game. And it's a lot easier to do if you're playing at 1 in the early set of games than if you're playing later. Because now if you're playing at 4:25 or 4:30 or 4 o'clock, whatever the time is, depending upon the network schedule, you're already looking at that scoreboard all afternoon, and you're looking at those 1 o'clock games, and you're seeing, oh, you know, the Bears are beating Detroit. Oh, this isn't good. And now you're thinking about that, and you're thinking about that. Now you know the Bears probably have a 31-17 lead late in the third quarter before you go out to warm up.
We get it.
And that wrecks you.
We get it. We get it. Question here is, Lions, is that scoreboard going to be up at M&T Bank Stadium? I was told that it's not.
You mean in
MetLife Stadium. Sorry, I'm a week behind.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. They're not going to put it up. You already know that?
The media yesterday in the Giants locker room, they were asking the players, are you going to be watching the scoreboard? And then the question was posed, well, we're hearing that it's not going to be up at MetLife Stadium.
Well, that's the kind of thing in the past where I know teams have put up the score if they know it's favorable to them, and they haven't put up the score if they thought that it would be bad for them. And then the players kind of figured it out and said, oh, I didn't see the score. I knew it wasn't good.
Well, you could use it as a motivational factor, essentially, as you just alluded
to.
You know, I mean, if the Lions are beating up the Bears, let's say, at halftime.
Like 21-0.
Yeah,
Coughlin, put it up there.
Go into the locker room and say, listen, you know, there's an opportunity staring you right in the face.
If that happens, you'll have to peel me off the ceiling. Actually, she will.
Well, we have to peel you off the ceiling any week. Does it really matter whether the stakes are high, the stakes are low? Come on, Paul. I know you too well.
That is true. 201-939-4513. Let's start our calls. We go to Jay in Brooklyn. Jay, welcome.
Hi, good morning. Happy holiday.
Same to you, Jay.
Yeah. I have two quick things I want to say. For the Giants, man, I don't know what happened to them, but for the past 2 weeks, they just got stomped.
Jay, tell us something we don't know, Jay.
And the other thing, I know this is a Giants thing, but I just hate the way people are treating Tim Tebow. I don't think he deserved that. I read an article this morning, and my mouth is dropped. Merrill Arch called him a fraud, a pony. You know, it's just crazy. I know he's not a good quarterback, but this dude don't deserve that. He don't.
All right, Jay, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it.
Well, that's another example that Giants fans should be appreciative of their quarterback situation compared to what some other teams around the league have to deal with, such as the Jets.
And just to kind of, I mean, he brought it up. Just to, do you know the whole fiasco, what's going on with Tebow?
Yeah, and you know what? He's going to be out of here one way or the other.
Well, that's what he said. He said, listen, you know, why am I going to waste the time saying what happened? Why? Why is this happening
to me?
He's like, I'm just going to look forward, and he'll probably end up in Jacksonville next year, right?
Yeah. So let him go.
Okay. Life's not fair. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Steve in Staten Island. Steve, welcome.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Happy late Merry Christmas to you.
Same to you.
Hello?
Yeah. What you got, Steve? Same to you.
Hey, how you doing today, guys? All right. Well, listen, you got to just give me a few minutes on this here. You know, yeah, as a fan, of course, I want to see this team in the playoffs, okay? I mean, it's a shame that, unfortunately, they really have nobody to blame but themselves, that they put themselves in this position. To lay an egg the last 2 weeks they did, to me, it's upsetting because you figured, all right, you know what? The beat down in Atlanta, this team's going to pick their bootstraps up and they're going to handle what they got to handle in Baltimore. And you know what? It's kind of disconcerting to see that they didn't respond all that well. And you know, a lot of people have to take blame for this, okay? I mean, obviously this team needs several changes, all right? They need a linebacker. I don't care what you tell me. This team definitely needs a linebacker, all right? Love Chase Blackburn. I think he's a gamer. But, you know, I'm not happy. You don't see anything really production out of Bowley or Rivers. I mean, it's just, you know, it's not just to get on them, all right? Even with the wide receiving situation, you know what? I don't know how you guys feel, but I'm going to tell you something, okay? He missed Manningham. And you know what? You could say, no, you move on, and I understand all that. But you know what? He missed Manningham, and nobody's going to tell me that he didn't, okay? Because what Manningham brought was just something a little extra that, you know, they piggybacked, you know, it was like he piggybacked off Cruz or piggybacked off Knicks, and they didn't have it this year. It's unfortunate with Barden because he was brought in to make the Giant fans forget about Burris. But right now, and I'm talking from me and several of my buddies who are big Giant fans, they want to forget about Barden. I would like to see Reuben Randall a little bit more. I think every time Eli called his number, he made some spectacular catches. I think that kid's a diamond in the rough. You know, I just think that it's a shame that they're in this position. Defensively, I don't know what Corey Webster was thinking. I still scratch my head when I think about that game. But you know what? It is what it is, and they put themselves in this position, and now they need help. And it's a shame that they've done this. But as a fan, I'm behind them. I'm still, you know, I believe in my heart that it's going to happen. That's just the way I am because I bleed blue. But
Steve,
thank you.
Thanks for the phone call. There's a lot of things that you touched on. First and foremost, the linebacking position, guys. Chase Blackburn, we know the story last year. We saw what happened this year. I think Rivers has been somewhat of a disappointment. You and I were both really impressed with his play up in Albany. I was expecting bigger and better things from him this year, but of course, and the biggest knock on him is that he's injury prone, and sure enough, he suffered some injuries this year. Bowley didn't have the season that he had last year, that we saw this season. So, you know, this linebacking core, I think as a whole, did not hit the mark.
Well, you know, Jaquan Williams was supposed to be a very big component of Perry Fuel's defense this year. I had a conversation with Perry about a month ago and said to him, I think Jaquan was a bigger loss than most people realize. And he said, you are not kidding. They had such big plans for him in terms of what they were going to do with their sub-packages because he was able to play both linebacker and safety in the monster position as the three-headed guy, you know, the Ghidra, so to speak. That was a horrible loss. And then when you compounded it with Kenny Phillips, who missed a number of games, and then when he played wasn't right, it just made things so much worse. And then obviously Will Hill got suspended for 4 games at the beginning of the season, which set him back. I mean, remember, the kid's a rookie. And so he already was going to have a learning curve coming in. Think about it. You know, this was a very significant piece in the overall defensive scheme, and the Giants actually went 3 guys through their depth chart before they actually could find anybody who could consistently get on the field and give them what they needed to do. That's a big part of what happened to this defense this year. You mentioned Keith Rivers, who had a sensational training camp. I mean, an all-pro August. And then, bingo, those injuries come back and bite them in the rear end again like they did in Cincinnati. And so the question that Jerry Reese has to ask himself is, do you take another shot on a Keith Rivers and hope that next year he can give you a healthy season? You got to figure Jaquan Williams will bounce back and be healthy. Look, he's a young player. He's only in the league a couple of years. I think you can still count on him to come back and be what you expect him to be. Michael Boley had a bad second half of the season. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Chase Blackburn, you're hoping to upgrade there. They were hoping Herzlich would steal the job this year. He did not. And in the two games that Herzlich played, he played very poorly. I don't think you give up on him, but I certainly think if you can upgrade there, and maybe if Herzlich can get his act together, that's not a bad thing.
Lance, why don't you comment in regard to what our caller said about the wide receiver position? I will agree with him on this. I do believe this team missed Mario Manningham this season, but for the main reason that he was able to spread the field. Defenses were not playing honest. They really played a very short field without Mario Manningham here, which took a lot of those, you know, those 10 and 12 yard square ends that we saw the tight ends have last year. We didn't see a lot of those this year.
Well, Manningham benefited last season from having a healthy Hakeem Nicks and a healthy Victor Cruz playing alongside him, and clearly he made defenses pay. For a financial reason, the Giants decided that they had other options on their depth chart, and they let Mario Manningham sign with the Niners because they felt that with the draft pick in Reuben Randall and with Ramsey's Barden maybe getting healthy and slowly progressing, they had stopgaps, guys that could fill the void. Plus, Dominic Hickson was coming back, and he was hurt for the majority of last season. Unfortunately, guys got hurt again. It was a game of musical chairs, and as good as Reuben Randall was, and I think the two of you would agree, it's really been a flash here and a flash there. It's been a rookie learning curve for Reuben Randall.
Most guys have that.
So you got what you maybe expected out of him, but he still has ways to go. And I understand fans watch Giants games and they say, well, Randall clearly, when his number has been called, he was more effective than Ramsey's Barden, maybe more effective than Dominic Hickson. But at the end of the day, the Giants are going to go with the veteran presence. They're going to go with the guy that knows the playbook, can do other things, can block for the running backs up the field, knows to run the right routes. Reuben Randall is not necessarily at that stage, just as David Wilson wasn't yet at the stage where they were willing to throw him into the mix right from the start because he had to still learn the scheme from a pass protector.
You know what was disappointing for me, Anita? We talked about it during training camp. I thought Reuben Randall was going to be all NFL rookie. I thought he'd catch 40 passes. He'd be a big part of this offense.
Yeah,
I thought he would step up.
You had a man crush.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because his skills are so impressive. What I did not count on was the lack of maturity. The lack of having the intangibles, the rookie learning curve, if you would. I really did not count on that being a problem for him because I was so impressed at rookie camp. I was so impressed during the preseason. I thought it would just translate right away into the regular season. I misfired on that one. This kid needed a rookie year to grow up, and it showed.
And the other factor that I wanted to throw in, just looking back at what he did in college, Paul, he'd never played with a top-notch quarterback at LSU. They pretty much ran the football and relied on their defense.
Right.
So you would assume, now that he has the opportunity to play by Eli Manning, perhaps he would make huge strides. But then again, you're still adjusting to a new playbook, a new offense. Things sometimes take time.
201-939-4513, the phone number. Let's go to Eric in North Dakota. Eric, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Hello, everybody. Merry Christmas to everybody out there. My question was kind of concerned because going around the rumors, are the Giants going to be letting go Justin Tuck and Uzi Minerio? And if so, do you think they'll be looking to get some free agents from the elsewhere?
Well, OC's contract is up, so he's an unrestricted free agent, and undoubtedly he's going to get a few offers and probably one that's going to be better than what the Giants will offer. So I would think the odds are better that he will go as opposed to Tuck. Tuck has another year left on his contract. I don't expect him to leave. I don't expect the Giants to ask him to leave. I think they're going to hope that he's healthy next year and has a bounce-back season. Let's face it. You know, he is one of the co-captains on this team. And at 31 years old, there should be some more tread left on that tire. I will tell you this, though. He's a beaten-up 31. Justin Tuck has been through the wars since his rookie season, and he's probably physically a lot older than he should be.
And he was banged up all of last season, too. Remember, it was a big grind, especially with that neck injury, for him to even just get through last season. But this is the point that I wanted to bring up with respect to the defensive line. And I know everybody's been trying to break down and analyze why were they not able to get to the quarterback consistently. And at first, I pointed to that they were mostly healthy, with the exception of Justin Tuck. Look at DeMarcus Ware, for example, this season. He's dealt with elbow injuries, neck injuries, and shoulder injuries.
Why did I know a cowboy was going to come into this
DeMarcus
conversation?
DeMarcus Ware.
Why did I know
11 and a half sacks despite the injuries. So
right.
There are examples of players, despite them having to battle multiple injuries, that fight through it and are still effective. And that, I don't think, has been evident on this Giants team this year.
Well, it's also a lot different when you're playing stand-up linebacker than when you're playing with your hand on the ground.
But you can't overlook difference. The fact that it's still three different injuries that this player had to deal with, and he's still considered one of the top pass rushers in the game.
I would also counter that Spencer's had a very good year for Dallas.
True.
Opposite him, and that does help. The Giants, unfortunately, have not had a truly spectacular season from any of their guys on the front four, and that's probably affected all of them down the line.
But they've had the personnel, at least from a resume perspective.
We thought so.
Let's continue with our calls. We go to Scott in New Jersey. Scott, welcome.
Hey. So my question, hey, everybody out there, is basically where does Corey Webster stand at this point, and why is he still on the team? It seems that Corey Webster keeps, I don't know how to put this in a way, where he keeps forgetting his route and turning at the wrong point, looking for the ball whenever it's not where it should be, and losing track of his offensive defender.
I probably should take this first since I'm a big Corey Webster fan and have been since he got here. I've seen him go through the trials and tribulations of a poor defensive coordinator, of going through a whole bunch of injuries that hurt his defensive game. And then I saw him blossom into a really good player. And right now he's had a bad year, no question about it. Part of it was because of the hammy. Part of it was because of the broken hand. But you know what? He got healthy during the second half of the season, and his play did not improve. In fact, it kind of just stayed pretty bad. That's a concern. I will tell you, he is signed for next year. If the Giants want to do something with him, if they do, it's probably going to be a restructuring. I don't think they are of a peace of mind to get rid of him. I really don't. I think they're looking for a bounce back year, and I think that to do that, he's probably going to have to juggle some numbers around. But I think he will be back, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised.
And based on the nucleus of the corners, I don't think right now, unless the Giants obviously go out and get a veteran free agent, that they can afford to part ways with Corey Webster, because then you're left with really a nucleus of youth, Paul, that's unproven for the most part. Prince Amukamara has been fighting injuries the last two seasons. Jayron Hosley just got through his rookie campaign. Tryon's been around the league. Corey Webster's your best option at this point when you look top to bottom at the corners.
201-939-4513. We go to Charles in North Carolina, wants to talk about the coaching staff. Here we go. Charles, welcome.
Hey, good morning, guys. I look at it like this. That D-line, I'm in North Carolina, so I'm a Giants fan, but of course the Panthers are here, so I obviously see those guys too. When I see guys like Charles Johnson and Greg Hardy having successful seasons on their D line, and let's be honest, the Panthers D line is not impressive at all. Look at the Giants, and Pierre Paul had an off year. Tuck pretty much didn't do anything this year. OC had an okay year. For me, I look at it like this: Pierre Fuel really hadn't had but one successful season as a D coordinator for us. That was the first year he came. The next year, last year when we won the Super Bowl, we didn't have a good year statistically on defense like that. It wasn't out of this world.
All right, time out, though. I got to stop you here just one second. The six-game winning streak that included the four postseason wins and the Lombardi Trophy, I believe the Giants were giving up an average of 16 points a game during that time. You were not happy with that defensively?
Well,
I'm just checking.
I remember Perry Field saying, before the first playoff game, I believe he said, he was like, yeah, we had some injuries, and I was trying to compensate for that, but I just had to go and do it my way. I think I remember him saying
Well,
that
he
statement.
Did what he had to do to get the Giants to where they eventually had an opportunity to make a run. And when all of his guys got healthy, they made a run. And the defense was pretty darn good.
Okay, here's my point. My point is, I just feel like teams know how to play this. They know how to guard against this Giants D-line now. They know how to scheme against it. That's why we're not seeing the sacks that we usually see out of this D-line. This team is built on pass rush. if the pass rush doesn't get there, well, then you're going to have Corey Webster getting beat like he is. Corey Webster's never been an elite cornerback. He never has been. He's never had elite speed. He's going to be successful when the D-line can get to the quarterback. This D-line, I just think teams know how to scheme against it now. There is nothing fresh about the scheme that we're employing on offenses. Yes. Teams know what we're going to do, and they're guarding against it. On the offensive side of the ball, I've been saying for years, I think Eli was overcoming bad play calling, and we had so much talent on his team that we could overcome Gilbride's mindset and thinking or whatever he's doing out there. I just always felt like Eli, Hakeem, even when Plexico was here, we could overcome what that guy was implementing. I just think we need two fresh OC and a D. We just need two fresh minds on both sides of the ball that can refresh this team, throw some life into this team, and get us going in the right direction.
Charles, thanks for the phone call. One thing that I think Giants fans need to understand is that Kevin Gilbride and Eli Manning, they've been in this system. They've been playing with the system for ever and a day now. Gilbride calls in a play. At the end of the day, there's three different formations. There's three different results that Eli can go with that one play. At the end of the day, Eli is making the final decision if it's going to be a run or a pass, who his look down's going to be. I mean, it's not just – I hope Giants fans understand. It's not just Gilbride. He calls in a play, and then there's three – that's the word I was looking for. He calls in a play. There's three variations of that play, and Eli rolls with one that he feels best will work. So this isn't just – you know, that really frustrates me when I hear that from Giants fans. You know, you can't – it's not like Gilbride's calling in a play, and then, Eli has to go in the huddle, call it, and execute. That's not the way this offense works.
You know, the other thing, and Lance, we need to defer to Anita on this one because you've covered three different NFL teams during your career, and you've often told me about how impressed you are with these coaches and how they prepare and the way they conduct themselves and how they get ready for a game. You really don't know, and look, I've been around this franchise for 30 years. I haven't covered other NFL franchises. I've always been under the assumption from seeing different coaches who have come through these doors that this is an elite group of guys, but you know better because you've been in other organizations.
Well, I mean, you know, defensively, when I was with the Ravens, Rex Ryan was the defensive coordinator. And granted, folks might not like him as a head coach. Yeah. He was one of, if the not best defensive coordinator I've ever seen. And a big part of that was because Ray Lewis, in his prime, was an extension of Ray on the football field. The two of them shared the same brain. So I'd never seen a defense like that or covered a team that had a defense that was so on the same page with its coordinator, had so much respect for its coordinator, played not only for themselves but their coordinator.
I wish you had seen Spags when he was here. That might have been close.
No.
Might have been close.
No, I don't even think so.
Okay.
No, I don't think so. But offensively, it was interesting when I started covering the NFL, Don Shula was the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. Dan Marino was the quarterback of the Miami Dolphins. And then as you recall, you know, their changes came. Jimmy Johnson came in. Jimmy Johnson and Dan Marino didn't like each other. And then the offense, because Dan was so established, the offensive coordinator who came in kind of allowed Dan to kind of run the show, kind of like Peyton Manning runs the show. You know, you saw it towards the end of his career in Indy, and of course now you're seeing it in Denver. That is the Peyton Manning offense. It is his show. Runs it. Here it's very different. Here Kevin Gilbride and Eli Manning are a team. This offense, the way it's run, they're a unit. There's not one that upstages the other. One plays good guy, one plays bad guy on the sideline when players aren't doing what they have to do. They run this together, and I like the system that they have here. The only thing that I think is a negative is how difficult this system is to run if you're not a quarterback. Because as a quarterback, it's 75% of this that position is cerebral. Understanding the playbook, understanding defenses, walking up to the line of scrimmage, reading a defense, knowing when to look off, understanding the mismatches, trying to isolate those mismatches. Wide receivers, running backs, you didn't have to do that in college. You were given a route tree, run a 9, a 7, an 8, a 1, a comeback, run through this hole, run through that hole. That's the most difficult part, I think, about this offense, guys, is that everyone is held responsible for learning the offense, learning how to read defenses and knowing how to adjust your routes and knowing how to adjust plays based on the defense that you're seeing. And then you have to hope that the defense you're seeing and you're reading is the same defense that Eli Manning is seeing. So I love the offense that, Eli and Gilbride have established here. I think the biggest problem is your number one running back has been injured all season. Your number one wide receiver has been injured all season. And this offensive line needs some help. This isn't Gilbride. This isn't Eli. This is your starting running back, your number one wide receiver, and your offensive line have not been great all year.
There was no stability at those two positions. And I think that maybe one of the things they want to look at is getting younger at the offensive line, because clearly it seems age and injuries are catching up with some of these guys. And, you know, the other thing to keep in consideration is we're not that far removed from the Giants having a top five offense under Kevin Gilbride. So he has had success with this personnel and with this unit. And number two, look around the league at other examples. Changing coordinators is not always the best script to follow. The Bears and the Niners are probably the two teams that jump right off the page. Alex Smith, before they changed to Colin Kaepernick, how many different offensive coordinators did he have to go through?
Six.
And how much did that stunt his growth?
A lot. Same with Jason Campbell. I'll make an argument for Jason Campbell all day long. I think people have given up on Jason Campbell. And if you think I'm crazy, that's fine. But I think that's been his biggest problem as well. I think I'll take Jason Campbell as my quarterback over Mark Sanchez any day of the week, people.
Well, and I think the Jets may certainly take you up on that.
You know what? There's a report that's going on right now that the Redskins are looking to possibly trade Kirk Cousins. So,
no kidding.
Yeah. So.
Well, after what the Eagles were able to get for Cobb, who knows what the Redskins will get for Cousins?
So I guess that one performance against the Cleveland Browns really impressed a lot of folks.
Wow.
So,
but I don't know if I'd want to part so quickly with him. You know, RG3's got the mobility factor. Clearly he got hurt this year. And look at how Kirk Cousins was able to step right in and keep their playoff hopes alive. So sometimes it's not necessarily good to get rid of your backup.
But at the same time, Dan Snyder has traded away, what, all his picks for the next 35 years?
Badly.
They need picks.
Badly.
Well, they need to bolster that defense. That's what they could use with those picks.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Dave in Westchester. Wants to talk about Coughlin, Reese, the whole crew. Dave, welcome.
Hi, guys. Thanks a lot. I really enjoy the show.
Hi.
The question I had is more along the lines of Coughlin and his loyalty to his players. You guys made the remark how Coughlin will go out there with the veterans. And I'm thinking back to the end of Sean O'Hara's reign with the Giants. And the common fan was disenchanted when he got put back in the lineup. If you remember, the Giants had started to run the ball. I think they had put Booth at center at the time, and were getting some push on that O-line. And quite honestly, that's basically the only time they've had a significant push, consistently over the past couple of seasons. Coughlin went back. He put O'Hara back in. And then at the end of that season, when rosters came together, both Soibert and O'Hara were let go, which was, you know, I saw Reese coming in there making a move where, you know, part of it is injury, part of it is finances, and part of it is play. And the question I really have is Coughlin, you know, he's such a loyal guy. Is he loyal, you know, to a fault where it comes in where Reese has to come in and make that decision? I'm thinking ahead with, you know, a great Giant like Dave Deal, who has given his heart and soul to this team. And it looks like he's at the end of his road and looks a little – he looks slow out there in just his ability to react at this point. And you know, they don't have a lot of options to throw out there ahead of him. You know, I don't know if Brewer's ready. But, I mean, is it really the GM making that call and because he can and he can be, you know, kind of ruthless there? Is he protect Coughlin from his own loyalty? Or, you know, how do you think that breaks down when they do that assessment at the end of the year?
Well, remember, the Giants are a two-headed system. The GM makes the personnel calls and the coach coaches the players that he's got. This is not one of those deals where the coach is the personnel guy and the GM. And so there is a clear line of delineation between Tom Coughlin and Jerry Reese. Now, do they discuss things? Sure they do.
when they come out of the room? Do they say they're always on the same page? Sure, because they do come to an agreement. They may bicker about things on their way to an agreement, but ultimately, when they decide something's going to be, it is the Giants' decision. And they're very clear about that. That's the way it's been here for 30 years, at least the 30 years that I've covered the team. As far as David Deal, I would only say this. His days as a frontline starter for a quality NFL football team are really behind him. At this point, he's best served to be a backup, or if he's going to start somewhere else, it would have to be for a lesser team.
201-939-4513. What would a show be without Big Ed calling in from Maryland? Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live. Again, Anita Marks, Paul Dottino, and Lance Meadow. Welcome.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Merry Christmas to you all. This is like the first Christmas we've actually had together.
What'd you get me, Big Ed?
I got you a nice, fat, juicy Cuban cigar, Big Paul. That's the only way to do it, baby.
Oh, man.
Hey, all I want to say is we've had a great season. It's still not over. Faith is only going to make us win at this point. So I really – and as far as all this other stuff I've been hearing all this morning about coaches and everything, let me tell y'all something. GM's GM. Coaches coach. Players play. That's it. Simple as that. Anita does Anita, Lance does Lance, and Paul does Paul. And Big Ed, of course, is still Big Ed. But that's just it. And as far
thank
as
goodness for that, Big Ed. Thank goodness for that.
We clarified all that, Big Ed.
We got to have some faith in you.
Garbage, man. Y'all got to understand, this is a job. This is a business. This is what we do for. This is what we do for a living. So, guys, I mean, these are the Giants. They go in, they lift those weights off season. They go through the film room. They look in film and study. I love Kelvin Gilbright. I had problems with him. I was cussing him out. Yes, I said it. I was cussing him out because he was making some terrible calls that it didn't seem like that should have been made. And then they missed so many. And then I love him. We win championships. You got a good coach. You don't win championships being a bad coach, period. Now the question is going to be who's going to replace Tom because Tom is almost near his end. That's my main question of the day. Who's going to replace Tom after he leaves? Because we need a quality coach to take a quality team to win quality more championships.
They get him. Well, I'm only going to say one thing. He's got 2 years left on his contract.
Yeah,
so we're not there yet.
Yeah, no, he has 2 years on his contract. But I understand what you're saying. You're looking towards the future.
Yeah,
I'll say this.
Exactly.
You know, because of the championships that Tom has won here, you know, I think he goes out when he's ready. I think it's on his terms. But with that being said, you know, I think that there's a lot of guys in the NFL right now, former coaches that are in the media, that sit back and wait for the right opportunity. For example, Bill Cowher. Everybody and their grandmother wants Bill Cowher as their head coach, but he's not gonna go coach the Bills. Do you know what I mean? I mean, when that time comes and when that bridge is crossed and Tom Coughlin feels that his days coaching football is over and he walks away from the game. I think there'll be a plethora of fantastic coaches that are just itching at the to get in here and coach this team because of this organization. Agree or disagree?
No, it's got a tremendous history. It's an attractive job, like you said, whether it be for veteran candidates or college candidates or, you know, middle-of-the-pack candidates. The bottom line is they have a winning tradition. They have strong leadership at the top. So I think certainly the Giants will be able to pick whoever they want when the time comes that Tom Coughlin chooses to call it a career.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, who wouldn't want to coach this team? Seriously. I mean, if you were out there and you were looking for a head coaching job and you know, you were just waiting for that right chance, what would be bad about this job? Except the only thing that would deter somebody from taking this job, there's only one thing, and that is if their personality could not handle
you.
The pressure cooker.
Okay, I was going to say the media, and that's part of you.
I guess. I mean,
no, I don't. I think. Go ahead. Finish what you're saying.
There are some people who are just not suited for here. You know.
You're talking about the media?
No, I'm talking about the coaches. There are some coaches who would not be suited for here because they could not deal with what the New York animal does to you. George Young had determined before Bill Parcells retired
that Bill Belichick, at that time when he was the Giants defensive coordinator, would not be suited to be head coach of the New York Giants next after Parcells, because he said, this guy does not have the personality and the makeup to handle New York City, especially at this stage of his career. And that's why Belichick was never going to be considered as the Giants' next head coach. It wasn't because they didn't trust him as a football guy. It's because George Young did not believe that Bill had the makeup in him at that stage of his life. And I think he was right, to be perfectly honest with you.
But one step further in the way that this organization operates, Jerry Reese has the final say in regard to personnel, draft, free agency. And so just one step, I'm just going to piggyback on what you said, and that is whatever head coach does come in, again, once Tom Coughlin decides that, that his days in coaching are over, you know, is going to have to be okay with that. Because I don't see that changing anytime soon. That's the way the Giants have done it, and that's the way they'll continue to do it.
And that's really the primary reason why Dan Reeves eventually left. Because he thought he could deal with the structure here. Came here, coached for a few years, and then realized, you know what? That structure's a little too tight around my neck. I can't do it.
And speaking of some of the names that you threw out earlier, Anita, and we don't need to sit here and speculate about everybody, but Bill Cowher, for example, is a person that had some decision-making power when he was with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I think he's also waiting for a team to maybe call his name where he can not just coach on the sidelines, but also make personnel decisions. So that's another big factor that big-time personalities need to weigh as to whether or not they're the right fit here in New York.
No, you're absolutely right. But when an organization like the Giants call, as opposed to, I'm sorry, if Buffalo's calling me saying, hey, we want you to be the head coach and you can make all the decisions in regard to who to draft, where we spend our money in free agency, or the Giants call and say, look, we want you to be the head coach of the New York Football Giants, but understand Jerry Reese runs the show in regard to personnel. That decision's made less than a New York second.
Well, working with the GM, I think, is a little bit easier compared to the Cowboys situation, where you would have to work with an owner who has a very big personality and clearly has clashed with some other coaches, such as Jimmy Johnson. That's why he left. They clashed, and eventually, you know, they just couldn't work well with one another. That's why no big personality other than Bill Parcells has even attempted to go towards Dallas.
Let's continue with our calls with you till 10:30 this morning. Anita Marks, Paul Dottino, Lance Meadow. Let's go to Andy in Missouri. Andy, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Hey, Anita. How you doing this morning?
Good morning.
Hey, longtime Giant fan, and I wanted to ask a question back to the preseason. Ryan Perilou did outstanding, in my opinion. With the success at RG3 and others like that from we'll just say mobility standpoint, is there any provisions for 2013 to consider him as somebody that might be in a wildcat or give the Giants some type of dynamicism? And also, given David Carr's status, what is actually, I guess, the question, what is happening with Ryan Perilou at this point?
Well, I don't know if you wanted Anita to answer that or myself. But
I haven't heard his name.
He's out of football.
I haven't heard his name or seen him around here in – I mean, where last year, if you recall, one week he was on the squad, the next week he was released, one week he was in and out of here pretty much each and every week. I mean, he's nowhere to be seen here. So.
Well, just maybe a sanity check, because I'm a longtime Giant fan. I live here in St. Louis. Obviously, we get to see the Giants from time to time. I guess it's just a question. Did his caliber of play warrant that he have consideration for, an RG3 type of a package or a Wildcat package?
It did not. Simply so put, it did just not. He was a kid who had a tremendous arm. I mean, the arm strength on this fella, really elite. He could whip it. Now, the problem is he didn't always know where it was going. He didn't always have a good release point. He didn't always read defenses as accurately as he needed to. Quite honestly, he was here for 2 years as a developmental quarterback because they just said he's got such rare arm strength, it probably pays to keep him around and just see what we can do with him. But his
level of play never really got to the point where he'd be a serious consideration as an NFL quarterback.
And Andy, here's the other thing that you need to take into consideration. NFL rosters, it's a numbers game. You only have 53 spots to play with. You know you're not benching Eli Manning. Are you going to keep a third quarterback on the roster just to run by chance a rare wildcat package when number two, you have speedy options? You have David Wilson. You have Reuben Randall. You can work those guys into different positions in the event you want to be creative. So I don't think the pros of keeping Ryan Perilou should be considered, given that you'd have to sacrifice depth at a corner, a linebacker, a defensive lineman, and look at the injury history that this team has had to go through. I would not want to sacrifice one of those players just to keep a third-string quarterback.
Let's continue with our calls. We go to Greg in North Carolina. Greg, welcome.
How you doing, Nita? Hey, Mark and John. I'm sorry, not Mark. Was it a Paul? How you doing, guys?
Hi.
Anita's still looking good, by the way. Just want to talk about the Webster. I noticed I'm a diehard fan. Just want to let you guys know. Don't see no interviews here from David Deal or Webster. Any reason for that? My second question I had is on Eisen Mailbag. Saw a video a couple of weeks ago, and the topic came up with David Deal. And it looked like that question was kind of blown off, saying Deal was the man, and he's you know, starter caliber, which I agree with, but he has lost a step. And I'm trying to figure out, do the Giants have a plan for that corner there, that side of the house? I'm really worried about the line. Eli need more time, and it's not looking good right now. I still got faith in my boys. I just want to hear some guidance, and what do you guys think?
Well, we addressed Corey Webster earlier, and there's no doubt he's had a poor season, but he is under contract for next year, albeit a big number. I would expect, and again, I'm going to tell you, it's premature for me to start talking to anybody about what they're going to do with their roster. So I'm not telling you anything inside. I'm just telling you, if it were me, I would find a way to keep Corey Webster on this team next season. As far as the offensive tackle spot, I've made it very clear since day one, the Giants need to get a big, massive stud on that offensive line to play tackle. I've made that very clear. David Deal's on the down. And it's time the Giants address it.
It's no coincidence, Paul, that the injury to Sean Locklear this season coincided with some of their struggles. You know, Locklear was so versatile because he was that swing tackle. He's had familiarity playing the left and the right side. Once he went down, and I know Locklear's no rookie, but he was consistent this season. That hurt their
good
depth.
Pass protector. Yeah. Not so good in the running game. Not a power run blocker for sure. He was a specialist at tackle. But nonetheless, he did that job well.
And the level of production dipped once he got hurt against the Redskins.
It did.
Let's go to Alan in D.C. wants to talk about the playoffs. Alan, welcome.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Happy holidays. I don't know, I've got two questions for you. Out of the four games that determine our fate, which one worries you guys the most? I believe that it's probably that Bears-Detroit game. You know, I understand that handling our business is the most important right now. But and the second question I have is, even if a miracle happens and we somehow manage to win and everybody manages to lose and we end up getting to the playoffs as the sixth seed, can we do what Aaron Rodgers did when he won his title?
Well, when Aaron Rodgers and the Packers went on a run, keep in mind they were playing their best football. They got that number six seed, but they were one of the hottest teams in the NFC, maybe even in the NFL.
The Giants, and likewise, last year.
Correct. James Starks had come back for the Packers. They got the running game going. They beat up Philly, crushed Atlanta on the road, then beat Chicago, and then took it all the way to the Super Bowl to knock off the Steelers. And you're right, Paul. The Giants, if you held them up against the Packers, there's a lot of similarities. Playing their best football at the right time, getting healthy, getting the running game going, the defense playing well. Are there any of those signs right now on this current team? So even if they did back into the playoffs, what makes Giants fans convinced that another run is capable? I'm not necessarily sold on that.
I would agree with you. It doesn't look good for them. But you know what? I still think they rather get in than stay out.
Well, you have to have a chance. And if you get in, you have a chance. No argument there.
You know.
Let's go to Zeke in Virginia. Zeke, welcome.
What's up, Anita? Paul, my boy Lance, how y'all doing?
How we doing, Zeke? What's going on?
I'd like to talk about the coordinators. And Lance, you know me. I'm not one to throw anybody underneath the bus. I'm not a fan to say fire everybody, but something stinks here. Okay, something does stink. Let's just start with the defense. For the past 2 years, our defense has been at the bottom of the league, 26 last year, I think we're 28 this year. And it's just, it doesn't make any sense to me how much talent we have.
I can't, I'm sorry. I can't let you continue when you present something as fact when the truth of the matter is the Giants' defense was badly hurt last year. When they finally got healthy, they ran off 6 wins, they won the Super Bowl, and they gave up 16 points a game. No, I mean, yeah, why do people insist on looking at their regular season stat total when the fact of the matter is Perry Fuel was playing shorthanded for a lot of the season, and then when they played the elite competition in the league, the best teams in the league, the Falcons, the Packers, the 49ers, by the way, Green Bay and San Francisco in their house, and the great Patriots and the great Tom Brady on a neutral field. What did they do, pal? Tell me!
Like I was saying, it does not make any sense. Because we were relatively healthy all year this year, besides Canny and Phillips. We had Roll. We had Webster. We had Prince. We had our linebackers. We had the whole defensive line. And all of a sudden, Tuck is so hurt. He can't play. He's not good this year. And we're still ranked at 28. I don't care who's out there. You got to play. You got to play. And if you stunk last year, okay, we're healthy at the beginning of the year this year, and we still stink. That's still a problem. We're still at the bottom of the league. Doesn't matter who's out there. Steve Brown has been a big help, somewhat of an upgrade. I'm not going to say an upgrade for Kenny Phillips, but he's been a ball hawk out there. He's really been a defensive player of the year if he was not Steve Brown. If Air Reed had the year Steve Brown been having, people have been talking about defensive player of the year by far. So, I mean, it doesn't matter who's out there. You got to play with the people you have. And, yes, we were injured last year. And, yeah, we won this magical run last year. But it didn't happen this year. We were in the top 15. We're 28th. We're terrible. Let's not cut it short. I mean, yeah, we had injuries last year. I understand what you're saying.
But you opened the call by saying the last 2 years Perry Fuels had a terrible defense. And then now I finally got you to back down and talk about what they did during the postseason. And quite honestly, if you'd been here every week and you saw this injury report that we have to look at every single Wednesday, and at one time they had 13 guys on the injury list, you know, you conveniently forget that Keith Rivers has been hurt, that Sean Rogers is on IR for the year, that Marcus Kuhn is down for half a year, Chris Candy was on PUP at the start of the season. I'm tired of trying to get people to understand the facts.
Well, also,
I'm tired of it.
Just really quick, he mentioned Stevie Brown. Understand that Stevie Brown has played on a million NFL teams and have never had the season that he had this year where, like, when his name wasn't presented on the Pro Bowl list, there was an uproar. And he will be the first to tell you that his success this year, he's grateful to Perry Fuel, the fact the Giants brought him here, and that he's playing in Perry Fuel's system, and that is what has helped him become the player he is this season. Also, one step further, I spoke to Chris Canty and was talking to Chris Canty. I said, what is it? Why is the defensive line having such problems? We got into that, and then I had made a mention about Stevie Brown, and he said, let me tell you something. He says, this is a safety's defense. There is every safety in the NFL is dying to play for Perry Fuel in this defense because, you know, we do our job up front. They should have twice as many interceptions as they've had this year. So this team, these players, Justin Tuck, by the way, really quick, yesterday, the media was asking Justin Tuck about Perry Fuel yesterday. He said, I didn't hear you guys asking me about Perry Fuel's defense. We were 6-2. We went 6-2 with Perry Fuel's defense. You weren't asking me if I liked it then. Why are you asking me if I like it now? Of course I like it. So keep that in mind. I mean, these players respect Perry Fuel. I've never heard a negative thing about his defense. And the season that Stevie Brown, you caller, you mentioned Stevie Brown, he will be the first to tell you his success this year is due to the system that he's playing in, and that's Perry Fuel's system. Lance?
But, Anita, what you're alluding to also is the fact that this defense was extremely opportunistic this season. I'll agree with you, Paul. They were banged up, maybe just as banged up as they were last season, but they were covering up their issues because the turnovers were piling up. And Tom Coughlin touched on this in his press conference yesterday. I'm going to read you the exact quote. He was asked about his thoughts on the lack of big plays on defense the last two games. This is what he said, quote, right, no turnovers. Well, we saw what happened when we got four. We made a big deal about field position, whether it be special teams or turning the ball over. We've made a big deal out of that, and it's been very critical. Our five best wins are all the top five field position games that we've played thus far. So that means that games that they were having success, the defense was getting turnovers, and in turn, it was setting up the offense in favorable field position. Perfect example, the Saints game. We talked about this yesterday. Average starting field position, the Giants 48. What has happened in the second half?
That was because of David Wilson's return. True. That wasn't so much the D.
Well, they had four turnovers, the Saints, in that game.
But David Wilson was out of control. He had 200 return yards.
But Breeze did cough up the football when they were driving deep into Giants territory.
But that's by design, though, Lance. At the same time,
but what happens when
defense,
the turnovers
as Anita said, it's designed to create turnovers. Everywhere he's been, from Jacksonville to Buffalo to New York, everywhere Perry Fuel's been, his defenses characteristically are high on the turnover charts because that's something that he gets. That's what they do.
But isn't that a catch-22?
That's a strategy.
Or a risky strategy
Now, that's another question entirely.
Okay.
If you want to tell me that that's not the way you want to go, then that's fine. But you can't criticize him and say, well, when they don't get turnovers, it doesn't work, if their whole strategy is getting turnovers, and that's why when it works, they get them. It's a bigger question and a different question that you need to ask, you know?
And before we move on, just a quick side note, because the way you responded to Zeke may have been entertaining to Anita and I. I'm just curious, did you see enough Eagles film tape this week? Because I don't think you had your normal dosage. That's why you may be a little too chippy this morning.
Are you okay?
I'm a little concerned.
I did not watch any Eagles.
No Eagles tape yet. So
none.
Is this going to be a cram session?
Yeah, but what do you...
Like you're studying for a late exam on Friday and Saturday night?
How
has the approach changed this week?
I talked to a scout, and I did not look at any film.
Wow.
And that's all I did.
But in all honesty, what film... like?
What would I watch?
Yeah, what would you watch?
I don't know
because
what I would watch.
Well, the wide nine, no longer very prevalent.
They're a lot different.
So therefore, you need to bring some new schemes to the table, Paul.
There's
some homework that could still be done. I'm not sold on these excuses here.
The holidays did take a preference.
I think you're in off-season mode too quickly here.
Let's take our last caller.
No, I'm just ticked off.
Andrew,
well, that goes without saying.
Andrew in New Jersey wants to talk about the Giants secondary. Andrew, welcome.
How you doing?
Great.
Yeah.
What you got, Andrew?
So what's going on? What's going on with the Giants? You know, Corey Webster's really been falling apart lately, and I feel that he's hurting our defense and that in the offseason that we should try to look for a new corner, maybe try to put Webster at safety because I feel that he'd do a better job because he's just getting burnt. Every game he's giving up big plays, and I feel that's one of the reasons for, like, the failure and the team's success.
He wants to put
Paul, this is a fastball right for you. Now, the question is, how are you going
to
handle
this? I'm going to try to be really nice about this. He wants to put
Webster
at
safety. Making strides.
Safety,
I like that.
Okay? And we know that next year, in all likelihood, there will be Stevie Brown, Will Hill, and Antrell Roll as your three safeties.
Sorry.
Right? That's okay. And so Kenny Phillips' deal is up. I would not expect him to be back. But the other three guys are going to be there. There's a logjam with those three. So even if it was an option, Corey Webster would not be moving to safety. And I'm going to leave it at that. I don't want to defend this guy any further than I already have, except that I believe he should be back.
And I think some Giants fans may be looking at what the Cowboys did, and the reason I bring them up is they moved Brandon Carr to safety and corner back and forth. But remember, he also had experience of that when he was with the Chiefs. It was a little different of a situation. And it also gets back to the point Paul and I and both of us were touching on yesterday. We did not see the true potential of this three-safety alignment this year. And it's basically the game of coulda, woulda, shoulda. Had everyone been healthy and Perry Fuel could turn to the likes of Stevie Brown, Antrell Roll, and Kenny Phillips for the stretch of 16 games, who knows really
and
where
Jaquan
this
Williams.
Defense could be. And yeah, Will Hill,
no
too, had he not been suspended.
And by the way, Why would anybody want to do what the Cowboys do? Because they haven't won anything in a long time.
True, and they've also been decimated by injuries, and they've been banged
up.
I'm just using it as an example, and I know you gladly have accepted that example.
Absolutely.
But their top corner is probably utilized in that way, where they don't just assign him as a corner. They've moved him around, and that's also because they lost Barry Church and others.
Yeah. Last thing before we do sign off. Again, Giants players were made available to the media yesterday, and Jenny Vrentis, who writes for the
Ledger.
The Ledger had asked Martellus Bennett, keep in mind, tight end Martellus Bennett, 1 year deal. Because now this is the talk. Of course, there's still hopes the Giants will make it to the postseason, but in the locker room yesterday, the New York media was all about the future and just flat out asked him, would you take a hometown discount? And he said to stay here and play for this organization? Absolutely. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Paul, but I think that there are a few guys on this team that you mentioned yesterday might have to restructure their deal to stay here. And I think they would be willing to do that because of the organization. And I know we've taken a magnitude of calls today in regard to this coaching staff and Giants fans out there unhappy with them. But I don't believe players would be willing to take a hometown discount if it wasn't for an organization, if it wasn't for the coaching staff around here. You know what I'm saying? So keep that in mind.
No, I think you're right. And I think that the funny part about it is that so many people look at Tom Coughlin as this old school, old fashioned disciplinarian. And when he first got here, the first couple of seasons, there was this media perception and fan perception that nobody's going to want to play for this guy. He's a mean, nasty SOB. He's not going to fit in with the modern day player, and it's never going to work. But what happened? Two Super Bowls later, you still have free agents who want to sign here and guys who want to stay here and, as you say, are willing to give a little cash out of their pocket to do so. So maybe Tom Coughlin's not such a bad guy.
And Martellus Bennett, just to piggyback off of your example, Anita, he's grateful for the opportunity he got. Remember, he was playing behind Jason Witten. Now, all of a sudden, he comes into a starting spot, he's playing every snap, and he's thrived thanks to Eli Manning's play. Unfortunately, he had the hyperextended knee, but they haven't had really a prolific tight end the last couple of years since Shock left. It's pretty much just been plugging in a guy here or there.
Busted, all right, but he got banged up too.
And keep in mind, just one more quick note, his brother plays for the Tampa Bay Bucks. His brother, from what I understand, has been kind of blowing him up, wanting him to come down to Tampa and be his teammate. And Sully, Mike Sullivan, is the offensive coordinator down there. Yeah. So if there is ever a team, I do believe that Martellus Bennett will be back and will sign another contract with the Giants because I know he loves this organization. He loves Coach Pope. He loves New York City. He loves living here and playing for this team. But if there is another team that I think that the Giants would lose him to, I think it would be Tampa Bay. Easy transition because those are the Giants offensively down south, and his brother plays there.
Agreed.
So just food for thought. Anyway, thank you so much for tuning in. Really appreciate it. Lance Meadow, of course, Paul Dottino, and myself, Lance, you're back tomorrow with Mr. Schmelk.
Correct.
So you can definitely tune in to that. Also, players and the offensive coordinators, since they were such a hot topic today, will be made available to the media later on this afternoon. So make sure you tune in to Giants.com for all their player and coach reaction later on in the day. And later on today as well, 4 o'clock Eastern time, set your alarm. Big Blue hits live Kiwi. Matthias Kiwanuka will join me for the show. You can watch online live, and you can actually call into the show. The same number here, 201-939-4513, if you have any questions or comments for Kiwi, and we'll bring you on. Have a great day, everybody.